the liberals and the literalists of the 20s. A battle that eventually resulted in Bostick taking leave of the pulpit of First Church rather than subjecting himself to the doctrinal discipline of the General Assembly by way of Williams Jennings Bryan. Of his times, Bostick said, the modernists were tempted to make a supine surrender to prevalent cultural ideas, accepting them wholesale and using them as the authoritarian standard by which to judge the truth or falsity of classical Christian affirmations. The reactionaries, sensing the peril in the shift of authority, were tempted to retreat into hidebound obscurantism, denying the discoveries of science, and insisting on the literal acceptance of every biblical idea, which even Christians of the ancient church had avoided by means of allegorical interpretation. Well, as the nation debates the building of an Islamic community center 2 blocks from Ground Zero, as well as what to do with the First Amendment rights of a mentally unbalanced preacher whose threat to burn the Quran has gone viral, Christians would do well to ask anew what it would mean for us to take Jesus seriously. Therefore, let us listen to him again, this time taking our cues not so much from our supine surrender to cultural values, from within the claims and context of those who heard him first. In a word, their context was tribal. Tribal. Israel was a confederation of disparate tribes living among other tribes, whose volatile relationships were historically checked as well as provoked by what each defined as the tribe's honor. Needless to say, little has changed in 4,000 years. According to a book by the same name, Honor, a History, by James Bowman, honor in these nomadic tribes meant the respect of the local group. Honor, the family, the extended clan, the tribe, the religious sect, the honor, the respect of the local group. I woke this morning to hear someone from the House of Lords saying that what we call religious conflict is not about faith, it's about the group. Think of that. In Croatia, in Serbia, in Ireland, in the Middle East, in the United States. Group honor involved maintaining a reputation for courage and loyalty, not being charitable to enemy civilians. The honor system in Arab culture, Bowman writes, is the default honor system, the one you see in street gangs in America. You diss me, I shoot you. You bully me, bully you right back. As we all know, the eye for an eye code in Leviticus must therefore be read as an enlightened and radical improvement upon the way things were in the wilderness. In other words, you take my eye, I take your eye, not your two eyes, your two hands, and other body parts. Yet even more radical are the words of Jesus, words that give us a glimpse of the kingdom at a time when the behavior of so-called civilized nations and peoples resembles the honor code of tribes more and more each day. To mention one word, Jesus' command on the Mount in Matthew, where he rang the changes on the law given to Moses a Spinoza said the same some 350 years ago and was excommunicated for the effort from the Portuguese Jewish community in Amsterdam. I had to pause there because I thought I was just in Amsterdam and was lucky enough to be given a seat on the tram on the way to the museum. And I sat next to a gentleman who began speaking to me in Dutch, and I politely nodded until finally I had to say English. And so he said, oh, excuse me, and of course spoke perfect English. And well, he was talking to me about a book he was reading on the Reformation. And I thought, okay. And he said, so he went on about, you know, Calvin, and of course, goodness knows the best Calvinists in the world are the Dutch Reformed. And he said to me, thank God my country is now secular because we are much kinder to one another. Unfortunately, I had to get off the tram at the Van Gogh Museum right then and could not continue discussing this with him, for he has at least in part a point. But anyway, back to Baruch Spinoza 350 years ago in Amsterdam, who argued that no group or religion could rightly claim infallible knowledge of the Creator's partiality to its beliefs and ways. After the excommunication, writes philosopher Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, he spent the rest of his life studying the varieties of religious intolerance. The powerful tendency in each of us toward developing a view of the truth that favors the circumstances into which we happen to have been born. The radical counterclaim of the biblical witness, when taken as a whole, a claim missed by readers who believe more in religion and tribe than in the living God. The counterclaim insists that honor is a gift of God, a reflection of God's glory, falling upon each and every human being ever born, says Karl Barth. Honor, therefore, cannot be lost. It belongs to the indelible character of each person's human existence. Honor is not overlooked, forgotten, or misunderstood by God, not even where a person tramples it underfoot or where it is trampled under the feet of others. To be sure, we can sin against our own honor, turn and distance ourselves from God's call and command. Or we can dishonor the honor of another, turn and distance ourselves from God's call and command of the other. But the honor remains constant. Hence, far from grasping or holding exclusively to God's honor as a possession of ours alone to defend, we may only receive it as a gift, new every morning, in pure thankfulness, and in the deepest humility, and in free humor, says Barth. In the deepest humility and free humor. If you really think about it, what fundamentalism doesn't have across the board, no matter what religion it's in, is humility and humor. So even though the enemy is a creature who may be against us and may appear to be from our vantage point against God, the enemy bears the indelible mark of God's honor no less than you do or I do. That's hard to swallow. Love your enemies, says Jesus, whose life and death revealed love not as a feeling, but as an action, not as an emotion. expectation of the other in return. And love never quits. Then in the second place, Jesus' words offer concrete help in obeying the command that is so contrary to the human code of honor in the wilderness. Pray for those who persecute you, Jesus says. Praying for enemies, notes Douglas Hare, New Testament scholar, involves a serious attempt to see the other from God's point of view. No doubt Islamic fundamentalists see us as infidels from the point of view of God's jihad. The claim of God revealed in Jesus Christ is plain contrary to this. And I bet the Quran, as interpreted by mainline Muslims, is clean contrary to. I mean, contrary to their own fundamentalists. For us, the other is one for whom Jesus died. No exceptions. None left out. We cannot earnestly pray for enemies without acknowledging our common humanity. They too have been created in the image of God, says Hare. And no behavior, no matter how nefarious, can erase that image. Besides, we cannot pray fervently for our enemies without reminding ourselves that the God who is able to love us despite our disobedience is able to love those who hate us. Or puts the matter another way, an interesting way. He says this inevitable honor that we all have is the honor both of being given the gift of life. Because we are human beings, God has bestowed this honor upon us. But he also says it is being called into service by God. God not only created us, but created us for a purpose other than our own selfish ends. Alongside our common humanity, Bart emphasizes our common call to God's service, noting that it is in service that two human beings learn to know and respect one another. Not by simply observing or thinking about one another, or even by living with one another, however great their concord and even friendship. The honor of two human beings is disclosed and will be apparent to both when they meet each other in the knowledge that they are both claimed for and by the service, the witness which God has laid upon them. In this regard, my eyes strain to see the beachheads of such prayer and service that seem so insignificant in relation to the hatred and divisions on every side of our common life. Beachheads that nevertheless help us imagine what it might look like to take Jesus seriously, to obey Christ's commands. I'll just tick off a few, and you probably could tick off your own. The seeds of peace in Maine, where Palestinian and Israeli children spend the summer knowing one another inside out. Corrie Miva in Northern Ireland, where Protestant and Catholic youth and adults have retreated for decades, only to return to the front, chastened and changed by one another's humanity. Work camps comprised of black and white, rich and poor, northerner and southerner, rebuilding burned churches or blighted city blocks. The House of Hope on the West Bank of Palestine, where I have been, and where Christian, Muslim, and Jewish grade schoolers learn the things that make for peace. Or take the story this week that made no headlines. The story of a church in Memphis, Tennessee. A few of you may have heard this. That put out a banner welcoming their neighbors who are moving into the mosque next door. modest extolling of God's glory, perhaps in the pious ejaculations of prayer, perhaps in the simple reaching out a hand to a neighbor, perhaps only in a small exercise of humility, sobriety, or courage. In these things, I hold no illusion about the behavior of nations. Nations being the judgment of God upon our choice to trust them more than God. But I would take seriously the one who spoke that day to a crowd of disciples on the mountain and is speaking still to you and to me. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you so that you may be children of God. Not exclusively. Not over against those who do not hear God's address as we do. Not for the sake of our own private salvation. For the sake that together we may be children of God. The biblical claim made absurd by the claim of power politics is that in loving the enemy, we show forth, we embody, we bear witness to the nature of the Holy One who makes the sun to shine on the evil and the good and sends rain upon the righteous and the unrighteous. We liberals in religion, concluded Vosdick, who have specialized in stating Christianity so that it would be simple to accept, and who have accomplished in large